Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
What you're about to listen to was recorded years ago when we were but young folk. This is a recap of a previous season of Stranger Things. We decided to drop them again to refamiliarize you with the show, just in case you don't have time to rewatch them all. We also encourage you to check out the rest of the show. Back in the days of yesteryear, we recapped each individual episode in depth and had a great time. A lot of people seem to have fun doing that, so feel free to revisit those. We're looking forward to Stranger Things season 4, so be sure to catch on up and listen to our live recap of season 4. Before that, we'll be back to discuss the season 4 trailer and rewatch the first 3 seasons and go over it all again. Make newer, fresher, hopefully more accurate predictions.
Jesus.
That's the cut.
It's like home, but it's so dark and empty.
What's it mean? 11. Friends don't lie.
Stop it! You're freaking her out!
He's freaking me out!
The upside down.
Do you understand what he's talking about?
No.
I found the chocolate bunny!
Oh God, please tell me it's not the kid.
I need you to hide!
Warnings are for coffee and contemplation.
Holy shit.
Welcome, all and sundry. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. Very sad and, well, really bittersweet day here at Streaming Things. This is our final episode of Stranger Things 2, which is essentially the second season of Streaming Things. What we got in store for you today is a quick recap of the entire season, our thoughts on it overall, and then we're going to move into our chocolate pudding section, where we normally enumerate our favorite moments of each episode, but this time it's going to be our top three favorite episodes of Stranger Things 2. And then we're going to move into our Eggo section, which is normally where we point out the Easter eggs and cultural references in each episode, but we're just going to overall talk about some of the cultural influences of Stranger Things 2 and point out some of the Eggos that we missed. And then we'll discuss a little bit about where we think Stranger Things is going from here, things we expect from Stranger Things season 3, things like that. Some fun little guesses.
The future Eggos.
We will talk about those as well. A little influences we think they might pull from in future seasons. And then talk about the future of Streaming Things itself, which is very near and dear to our hearts, of course, and hopefully to many of yours. But first, we're going to pick the winner of our November 7th review contest.
It's happening.
It's all happening. Finally, we will not extend the deadline in a thirsty begging of more reviews. It's done. If you're new to the show, we had a contest where if you rated and reviewed our show, specifically on iTunes, but wherever you possibly could, and screenshotted that and sent it to streamingthingspod@gmail.com by November the 7th, which is today.
Ta-da.
We would enter you to win a $100 Amazon gift card. And we've put all of the people that screenshotted that and sent to our email into a randomizer and chosen a winner. Steve, no drum roll because that ruins the audio, but drum roll in your heads, everyone. Just imagine one. Steve, who is the winner of that contest?
The winner of 100 bones.
100 bones.
An Amazon gift card for $100 is none other than Stacy Mills.
I was going to say, after this commercial break.
Tune in. So congratulations to Stacy.
Stacy, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for your support, Stacy. And thanks to everyone who chimed in and not only reviewed us and subscribed to us to iTunes, but also took the time to submit their reviews for us. I mean, maybe they were doing it for the potential 100 bones, but I mean, even so, that takes a lot to take some time out of your day to write up some nice things about three strangers who talk about a TV show.
Yeah, I can't express enough of my gratitude for all of the feedback that we've gotten. I really love your emails. I want to hear more of you. So send it in. Whatever you got to say, whatever your thoughts on the future of streaming things, things like that, or what we've already said. We'd love to have more audience participation and work that into our show. That being said, we're going to take a few of our emails and just spend a brief little bit just reading what the world has to say about what we're saying. And it's not much, just a little bit. I've got an email from Michelle C., who writes in. And when you do write in to streamingthingspod@gmail.com, please tell us where you're writing from. It's just a fun little tidbit for us, and I think it's better for the audience, just for the future reference. She was struggling a little bit with the review process, maybe a bad Wi-Fi connection in whatever city, but that's fine. I wanted to be considered for the contest. I am attaching my review, which I have tried to post several times, but for some reason, when I click on send, nothing happens. And maybe that's why we got less than 30.
Right.
You know, even though we were offering the 100 bones, maybe there's just a worldwide server crash that we just didn't know about.
Or maybe the new Apple Podcasts app sucks.
That's verifiable for sure. And then she went on to say, I'm going to try and send it through the desktop, but wanted to show I did at least try. And she screenshotted here, and to my knowledge, it did not go through, but we did enter you into the randomizer. So you were eligible to win because we're sweet guys. Went through a few Stranger Things podcasts, and you guys were the best for sure. I mean,
no,
for sure.
You're so kind.
And please let me know if you guys continue more with a different show. Thank you, Michelle. We do plan to continue. We thought we would do like single episodes on less popular shows. I do know like The Punisher is coming up very soon. And we're all excited to see that. We might just do one episode after we binge it talking about The Punisher. But we really need to hear from our listeners about where you'd like us to go from here and particular films or any particular shows you'd like us to go back and review. We're on board. And if it's something that we were already planning to watch or are interested in, think that we have something to add to the conversation, we will definitely consider that. But we want to hear from our listeners, obviously, because you're the ones that listen to us, and what you'd like to hear us analyze is extremely important to us. So I can't stress that enough. I know that Westworld is coming back in early, I think, spring of 2018.
Hell yeah, it's coming back.
That is absolutely something that we'll be watching and talking about. But there's a lot of time between now and then, so we need some more ideas. So send them on in. Andy, do you have an email you'd like to read?
I have another one here from Steve V.
Different Steve.
Steve stands for Steve Very Cool Hair.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Steve wrote in, hey there, gents. Just wrote a review for you guys titled Demo Likey. Wasn't able to get a screenshot before I submitted it. Hopefully you get it. Keep up the great work. P.S. If you ever decide to do shout outs, can I get a shout out to Kem, the Three Musketeers, to my dark mouth?
Very sexual shout out.
That is very sexual.
I'll give you the shout out.
There you go, Steve.
I'll give you the shout out. However, I'm conflicted. I have conflicted feelings on this.
Yeah.
On
I wanted this to read this
dark analogy, if you will.
The Three Musketeers to my Ivy League college.
Right.
I'm going to go home and try that line on my wife. Like, hey, girl, you got Three Musketeers to my dart mouth.
Got your favorite nougat.
Get away from me.
So what was her name? What was the young lady's name?
Kim. So yeah, shout out to Kim.
Kim, what's up, girl?
In Steve's mind, you're a piece of nougat to an alien. Romance. That's what we do here on the Streaming Things. We spread love.
Steve's ratcheting the love up to 11.
Ooh. And he's used that joke many times, and it works every time.
I've been sitting on that one.
Steve, do you have an email you'd like to read?
I do. This email comes in to us from Adam Parker. He writes, hey guys, I'm one of those new listeners. Came across you guys hunting for a podcast to compliment one of my favorite shows, smiley face emoticon. Very pleased to give you all a good review. Thanks for offering the giveaway, but you deserve the review for the great deep dives. Adam Parker, my goodness, you have the heart of gold. You are a saint, my friend. That is, those are some nice words.
I think we should edit in Steve, I believe, from like episode 5 of Streaming Things season 2, where he goes in his most adorable way.
Finger licking.
I feel
good.
Like he deserves extra points for using the emoticon instead of the emoji. Good on you, sir.
Yeah.
Classic. So that brings us to the close of our audience feedback. If you want to read some more of the reviews that were entered, they are, of course, on the iTunes app.
There's some good
for
ones.
All time. They are. There are. I was very heartened. I'd love to see more of those. We could have another contest coming up in a few months. We're definitely going to, you know, we might do something like that. And anybody who enters a review between now and then, we'll just automatically retroactively enter you in any future giveaways. But don't always wait for us to give you stuff. You know, we give you stuff on a weekly basis, more than a weekly basis. I feel
we
like
we give you all the business.
That's right.
All the business.
It's all the business. So you can go ahead and rate and review our podcast at any time. We love that. And we need that there. I don't know if you know this, more TV and film based podcasts than you could shake a stick at, as the old ladies say. And we need your help being identified in that broad world.
And we have to thank you guys for a long time on iTunes, the iTunes podcasting app. If you search for Streaming Things, we would not be the first thing that popped up. We were the second. And this week, listeners, this week, thanks to you guys and your reviews, we are now the number one thing that pops up when you specifically search for Streaming Things.
That's our lives have been validated.
Yes.
That is how crazy it is out there in the TV and film podcast world. We're still not in the top 8 of the Stranger Things podcast. And I don't know how that works. It is bullshit.
Bullshit.
That's as
shit.
Nancy would say,
bullshit, bullshit, bullshit,
bullshit, bullshit.
So if you search for Stranger Things and you see those 8 episodes, they really should just be 8 lines that say bullshit, 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 bullshit.
Streaming Things. Yep. Number 9.
Yep.
Number 9.
So yeah, we need your help. Continue to do that. So moving right in, overall thoughts on Stranger Things 2. I keep calling it season 2, but that's not what the Duffers intended. It's a sequel. It's a 9-hour film sequel to the 8-hour film original, Stranger Things, Stranger Things 2. What'd you guys think overall? Andy, we'll start with you.
I loved it. I mean, it's something that I've been waiting for forever, it feels like. I realize it's only been something like 16 months, but like I binged the hell out of 1 when it dropped, and I wanted so desperately to binge the hell out of this one too. And I've seen season 1 a couple of times. And so when season 2 dropped, I'm like, oh my God, guys. Oh my God. Like I'm starting to like sweat and shake. I'm getting like withdrawal syndrome, like constantly but I held off because we were doing this show. We wanted to be fresh every time we were recording the episodes. And so every time it's like getting that fix, it's like, oh, thank God. I can just sort of sink back into the couch. I can eat some Doritos and just chill. I don't think that I loved it as much as the first season. But if this is the Duffer equivalent of a sophomore slump, then I cannot fucking wait to see what we're going to get with Stranger Things 3. Because didn't we say before that we're confirmed for at least 2 more seasons?
I don't think they're greenlit for season 3 even yet. But we can all assume based on the massive success of this, right, that they're definitely going forward. But I think somewhere in an interview, the Duffers had intimated that they had enough material for around 4 seasons. And I think that's great because any show that goes after 5 or 6 seasons typically is fucking garbage.
Yeah.
At that point,
there's only so many stories you can tell.
Yeah. And all the greatest shows of all time usually end around 5, like Breaking Bad, things like that.
You have to have a good ending point or else it just becomes, you know, jumping the shark.
And the Game of Thrones is still good after 7 seasons. But that's, I mean, like you said, they have an end point they haven't reached yet. They're not just milking it like Walking Dead and just become a giant dumpster fire of zombies.
But so I feel like the show, it really, like, it had its moments where it derailed a little bit. But if I were to pick like a top 10 like favorite moments of all of Stranger Things, I feel like at least half of them would have come from 2. And that's fair. I can't say anything more like positive about how much I enjoyed this season. What'd you think, Steve?
I you know, echoing exactly what you said, we went into the season. I specifically went into the season with some concerns. Like I assumed it would be good. It would be great. It's Duffer Brothers. I knew it would be a quality thing, but I was concerned with where they were going. And it's hard when you have essentially your whole life to come up with a story and mm-hmm. make this amazing experience, like what the Duffers did with season one. And then all of a sudden it's a big success. You have a year to make a sequel.
Right.
So there's definitely going in, I was worried, like, well, I hope they weren't rushed to make something that isn't nearly as good. But thankfully, that's not what happened. This season surpassed my expectations. It didn't just meet them. Mm-hmm. It surpassed it and gave it the finger as it went by my expectations.
Right. And even like some of the concerns we had about the returning cast, you know, mm-hmm. specifically Noah Schnapp, who plays Will. It was one of those like, ooh, is he going to be able to bear this weight? Because he is a central fucking figure for the entire series now.
Yeah, he's and the anchor this season.
Is he going to be able to, you know,
step up to the plate.
Step up, exchange blows with these fucking legends of the screen, and he fucking, like, so surpassed my expectations for what he could have possibly done. I really thought they would have put him on the back burner a little bit, and they didn't at all.
Yeah.
Like, he put him up front and center, and he held his own, and that was fucking great.
And it was interesting that not only did they put him front and center, but it's also interesting to see what they did with other characters that were front mm-hmm. and center in season one, and they scaled them back to give other characters time to expand and become their own success.
Yeah, we didn't see hardly anything from Mike. Charlie Heaton, who plays Jonathan, he didn't have a whole lot of screen time.
They put Jay Bird on the bench.
Yeah, I think that was to the season's detriment. I think a lot of those things came off of a mistake, though. I think the fan service regarding the Justice for Barb plotline kind of derailed Natalia Dyer's character Nancy and Charlie mm-hmm. Heaton's character Jonathan a great bit, which I think was to the show's detriment.
Yeah.
And was just bullshit to me because I do not give a fuck about Barb.
Monster.
I mean, I understand it's good for Nancy's character on the one hand, because of course she would still have that in her mind and feel unresolved there. And I love actually what came out of it eventually with Murray Bauman's character, mm-hmm. Which I think is going to be a huge part of season three. But I just it was so sad to see Nancy so sidelined. And then Mike, again, very valid for his character. He'd be mourning Eleven so much. And in fact, on set, apparently they referred to him as Emo Mike, like even all the cast members. So even, you know, Finn Wolfhard, everybody was aware of the change in Mike's character and what mm-hmm. was going on. But it was a little disappointing and annoying at a certain point.
I think going with what you said, I'm not necessarily as upset about the Barb situation as you are, because mm-hmm. in the end, I do like where it circled back, and it was with purpose, and then Natalie Dyer, specifically her, she was able to come back towards the tail end of the season, you know, again, prove why we love Nancy so much. Yeah. Not so much Jay Bird.
She got kind of benched in the finale, though. I mean, like, her ultimate, like, where I need to go during this super climax is go sit next to Jonathan while they exorcise the demon from Will.
Yeah.
You know, she had the hot poker, and so I guess that, you know, she did something there, but it didn't feel as important as like her role in the last time, where it's like mm-hmm. we have to draw the Demogorgon away. The Hopper and I almost called her mom, but it's not her mom. My to-be boyfriend's mom. They're over there in the Upside Down, and we need to keep them safe. And you know, there was a lot more. There was a lot more reason behind what she's doing, as opposed to just being kind of reactionary, which is how I kind of felt she was this time around. I feel like her arc ended with the journalist Bauman. Was that his name?
Yes.
Yeah. Murray.
I feel like her arc for the season kind of prematurely ended. Like, what mm-hmm. was that, episode 6 or something, where they start sending those tapes out? She didn't have a whole lot to do after that.
Yeah.
And it definitely ended, like you said, but I think they gave her enough in the end to make mm-hmm. to keep us aware, like, well, Nancy's badass. We love Nancy. Yes. So I'm looking forward to see what they do with her in season 3. But the main person that I'm really just kind of bummed about this season is what they did with Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mike's character. Because they not only did they, you know, sideline him, but they didn't give him really anything to do other than just be a miserable fuck.
Right. Keep being shitty to Max, you know?
Yeah. And after we would, you know, we would come here, we would watch an episode, we would record, and when I would go home, I would pretty much almost sometimes on the same day rewatch the exact same episode, but with my wife.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you would just cry. Never mind.
We wept. But no, I would watch the episodes with my wife, and she actually looked at me towards the end of the season and said, like, I hate Mike now. He's the worst. Like, why do I hate him so much? And she's not wrong.
That's how I felt about Lucas in season one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Get the fuck out of here, Lucas.
But Lucas came back at the end of season one.
Came out strong. Yeah. Exactly.
I don't think Mike had a good comeback at the end of the season. Right. He was still kind of miserable and awful right up until the very end, maybe with 11. And at that point, I feel like that almost took away from their reunion at the very end.
When he had that scene with Hop where he freaked out on him. And I thought that was some very strong acting that I liked a lot. But yeah, even in the scene where everyone's reliving their moments with Will, trying to bring him out of his trance when he's strapped to the cardboard chair. I felt like Fenn's little scene was the weakest part of that. I was like, get back to Winona. She was killing it.
Right.
Even Charlie Heaton. I don't know if it's his cocaine addiction or the writing for the season or a mixture of both or maybe none of those things. But I just, last year we raved about his performance and I just couldn't care less about Jonathan, except for that moment where they met in the room outside and did that Indiana Jones moment. Mm-hmm. At Bauman's house. I love that whole sequence.
And I think maybe part of that speaks to how much we came to love Steve, like at the end of season one and all through season two, like when Jonathan's finally picking up Nancy, and that's something you're rooting for through most of season one.
Yeah.
Now in two, it's like, dude, she's spoken for. Yeah. Steve's our dude. We love Steve.
Steve's girl.
Yeah. I think we were talking about it in a different episode, but that's one of the bigger surprising things that come out of season two is how it's that relationship is flipped and but the audience is still like, no, we like him now.
Yeah.
What the hell, Jaber?
It's going to be interesting to see moving forward what they do with Steve's character, because much like Barb, you know, they were dictated to change their ideas for the plot because of the fans' reaction to Barb's death. And Steve is the same way. He was never intended to be such a huge character, but they couldn't, you know, ignore the fan reaction to, like, fuck yeah, Steve, by the end of season one. So they wrote him a huge part in this season. He was actually intended to be like a Billy character, just a cockboy, just full on fuckboy mode. just like a human bully for the kids to interact with. And then they gave him that.
I would pay so much money for one of the kids to look at Steve and call him a fuckboy.
Yeah.
Steve, you're such a fuckboy.
Well, that would be an anachronism, but it'd be worth it for sure. I also agree that season one is the better show. But that's almost unfair. I mean, the Duffers had their entire lives to plan and write season one, and then less than a year to write season two, because then they had to shoot it and market it and all those things. And we got it in, like you said, about 16 months. So really probably 4 months that they maybe spent writing this. And it's incredible considering that. It's a wonderful follow-up. It's a great sequel. It does everything you want a sequel to do. That, you know, the harder, better, faster, stronger thing that sequels always do that doesn't always work for me personally. But they managed to do that while also retaining the small character moments that make Stranger Things so wonderful. And I said before, like, you know, they had arcs that span both seasons. I think with David Harbour's character, Hopper, is one of those arcs. 11 grows a lot between seasons. You can track those. Steve, you can track an arc through both seasons. And that's not always easy to do. You know, it's not episodic at all. It's a wonderful 17-hour film. And it's hard to do. So bravo to them. But I think, you know, season one is definitely the stronger story. Absolutely loved it. And I couldn't say that I'm disappointed at all with Stranger Things 2.
Would you say that it kept the momentum of the hype for Stranger Things? So like, sure. Stranger Things 1 was amazing and, you know, Stranger Things 2 might not be as good, but does it keep that quality and that hype for continued series?
Yeah, I think with a Stranger Things 3, the fan base will be just as large and rabid, and we've got plenty to talk about and plenty of cool Reddit forums to go into and artwork to make and create and celebrate. I actually almost bought this giant framed Stranger Things poster from season 1. And I was waiting because I was like, I might want the 2 poster because it's so good. A lot of the artwork is so good from Stranger Things 2. I think I'm going to wait, spend that $80 elsewhere.
And I love all those 80s homage posters that they do in the build up to the new season.
Oh, yeah.
And they did a couple of them. And I don't remember if they came out before the season one dropped, because there wasn't a whole lot of fanfare when it dropped. It's just sort of like, hey, there's this new show. What? You know, and it's like, it just took everybody by surprise. And now this time, like, the cat's out of the bag, you know, and now everybody knows how amazing Stranger Things is. So we got a whole lot more as far as the advertising, but it was so much fun. Like the Evil Dead poster, there was a Nightmare on Elm Street one.
Yeah,
that was
a good one.
Yeah, it's just, I can't wait to see what the more 80s references that they can do in the lead up to season three.
And that's an interesting thing to note. Like when season one came out, it took the world by storm and no one knew it was coming. It had zero fanfare. It was just like this Netflix original and they were pumping them out like crazy at the time. And I remember hearing that it was pretty good from a few word of mouth friends. And, I remember looking at it like, I'm so sick of this, you know, nostalgia fetish based content. I have no interest in this quick grab, like Power Rangers reboot type shit. Mm-hmm. And had no idea.
I forgot, you know, that was a movie.
I've said it in the first episode of Streaming Things when we did the overall talking about season one. But it was a tweet from Stephen King that actually got me to watch it, where it was like, it's like a greatest hits of all my work. And I don't mean that as a negative thing. And I was like, oh, well, shit, I'm getting an endorsement of their biggest influence. Mm-hmm. I'm going to check it out. And it just, yeah, like Andy said, I watched all 8 episodes, I think, in 2 days. And I had way more important things to do. So that's a huge testament to that. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in, and more in than ever, I think, on these characters. And I love the Duffers. This sounds like sacrilege maybe, but I would like them to finish this up and see what else they could come up with and what else they could do.
Sure.
I know they said they didn't have many plans to go back into the film industry, that they just love what the versatility of TV. Mm-hmm. But I'd love to see what kind of short horror film, or not short, but, you know, what kind of horror feature they could do, short compared to them, you know, not 9 hours, maybe 100 minutes, and see what they could do. So that's what I would like to see from the Duffers. Any overall thoughts, any more overall thoughts on Stranger Things 2 before we dive into some little chunky games?
I enjoyed some of the themes that were present. One of the through line themes that I really enjoyed watching was just, Eleven's idea of what home means and what home is, and, just her journey of people offering her a home and then her taking it, but then running away. And then finally at the end of the day, realizing home is where your friends and family are.
Home is where you make it.
Yeah, exactly. I really liked that theme. It fit her character really well. And I liked that journey that she went on with Hopper specifically. I think that was one of another surprise going into the series, was just I wasn't expecting us to have such a concrete relationship between those two characters, and that turned out to be one of my favorite things of the entire season. Was Hopper and Eleven.
I saw an interview with Sean Levy, the producer, and he actually directed some of the episodes, and even on set that was like this major mythological force to look forward to, which I really enjoy knowing about. Like, fucking Millie Bobby Brown and David Harbour are going to be spending a great deal of time on screen together this season. And, like, you know, Millie's really excited. And Sean Levy was like, it was like the two Titans, you know, in a room together. And we were so excited to shoot that. And then Millie said a lot, you know, like she spent a lot of that time alone on set because she's just sitting there watching TV or trying to play with the TV and communicate with people. But so David Harbour was rarely there to shoot with her. So she's like, that was miserable. But when David Harbour would show up, it's just to bounce off of him was just a gift. You know, she was always excited to do that. And I wish I could be on set for a day to just see those two people work, because they're everybody's favorite characters pretty much. And
wasn't that something similar to the second Sin City movie? Josh Brolin he took the role to be in that movie because he wanted to work with, I forget the other actor's name. He had never worked with a guy before, but was like really excited because they shared scenes together.
Oh, nice.
But just because of the way they film Sin City, it's just like by yourself in a garage in front of a green screen. He never actually met the guy.
Oh, that's terrible.
And he was so bummed out about it.
I never even saw A Dame to Kill For.
I never saw it either.
Yeah, me neither.
It was very poorly reviewed.
I saw certain scenes out of it, and that was about it. Yeah. another theme that I really loved in episode or season two was just like the idea of being the outsider. And we got a lot of that with Stranger Things equivalent of It's Losers Club. But this time, like with Max, we kind of get like what it means to be the outsider, even among the outsiders. You know what I mean? Like she's just as nerdy as all them. And like, even they, some of them, all of them at first, and eventually just Mike, like, don't want her to be a part of that group. And so we get this interesting like perspective of like, who the fuck do you turn to if even the outcasts won't let you in? And we kind of have that sense of seclusion also with Eleven, like you were saying before, with all of her scenes with David Harbour, or at least her thread, so much of it, he's not actually there. So we get Eleven just showcased a lot and get to see like the emotional consequences of isolation. Mm-hmm. And then even with Bob, we kind of get to see the aftermath of that type of character. Like, who do these people grow up to be? And he's very much just like the embodiment of like the nerd who does well, the nerd do well.
Right.
Nerd do well.
Very nice. Very nice. And not only with Max do we see that, but with Will, who has this sort of PTSD and live issues going on with him that isolate him from his own group. And only Mike is able to identify with him because mm-hmm. he's emo Mike mode over 11. And so Will and Mike kind of form their own pact to, they kind of become like the Cure listeners in the group. The Morrissey fans, you know, hang out together and talk about the darkness while the other kids gallivant around. And yeah, so we see that a lot. And that's what I love about this show in general and these properties. I was listening to Peter Serretta, he's the editor in chief at Slash Film. And he was talking about why he loves Stranger Things so much is we don't hardly ever get to see anymore kids in real danger, mm-hmm. you know, danger of like violent reprisal. That was a thing that we saw in the 80s a lot. And it's kind of become taboo to put children in mortal danger. And we're seeing it arise because of Stranger Things again. So we got the It reboot, mm-hmm. which essentially what that is. And like a small child gets his arm ripped off. In the It film, right?
Yeah.
And that's in the story. And you don't really shoot that type of thing these days.
That's in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
and another thing that's great about Stranger Things is, you know, I noticed a lot of the fans are 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, whatever. And they love Millie Bobby Brown. They mm-hmm. love this show. And no offense, but they couldn't possibly understand the full breadth of how genius this is because they didn't grow up in the 80s like we did. The late 80s, you know, but I was poor, so I was watching 80s VHS a lot in the 90s when I grew up. But you know what I mean? So it's this wonderful thing that appeals to everyone from age 8 all the way up to 50, which is perfect. It's a great, mm-hmm. First of all, it's a great moneymaker, you know, marketing wise, but it also is able to speak and reach and speak to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I think bullying is a huge theme of Stranger Things too. Absolutely. Which, like we talked about before, Millie Bobby Brown has made one of her things that she wants to attack and combat in this mm-hmm. world. And they do a great job of showing in Billy's character, again, how the oppressed becomes the oppressor oftentimes in this world. And then through Max's character, how you can subvert that with a little love, a little loving.
Yeah, I think you touched a little bit on this other theme, but the idea of like PTSD or shared trauma mm-hmm. and overcoming that mm-hmm. Through your friends and family support is a big theme. I mean, that's Nancy's arc this season is dealing with the loss of Barb.
Sure.
The boys in some way, specifically Mike, is dealing with the loss of Eleven. But specifically, Will is... You know, he was in the Upside Down. He had this whole traumatic experience of last season. Joyce, in some ways, going through her own version of that. But he's actually kind of being attacked by like an actual physical, like this is it was a shadow monster, but it's actually, it could be like a representation of like, this is your past trauma. It's literally controlling your life. It's turning you against friends and family because you've been taken by it. You've been consumed by it, but he's able to come out of it through, you know, a lot of people helping him out.
Right.
And family. Yeah. And I love that they're able to take something that I think a lot of shows would have just ignored, where these kids go through something insane. They have like a crazy experience in season one. And then season two is like, well, back to normal.
Right.
No one feels bad about that at all.
You guys tried this jacking off thing yet?
Yeah. Dude, it's great. That's great. I'm going blind over here.
We have to address the monster we just fought. Yeah, that's great. And a lot of people do ignore that. And that's what's hard about a sequel. It's like, you know, you have very little time because you're ramping up a new plot to address like character deaths from before mm-hmm. and things that would affect you that you've gone through as a normal person. And Stranger Things, I think, does a good balance of those things, even as much as I didn't like it at times, especially mm-hmm. with the barb thread. But that's just me. No offense to Shannon Purser. So, we're going to talk a little bit about future 80s films that we think they could use, meaning the Duffers, what they could draw from. Obviously, in this season, there was a lot of Aliens and Evil Dead. In past seasons, they've done a lot of E.T. Mm-hmm. And things like that. So films that we, to our knowledge, they haven't touched yet as far as mm-hmm. References and cultural influences and just overall predictions for season 3. Steve, you can start us off here.
I think that a film that they'll probably refer, I hope they do, because I love this movie, is Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One could assume that.
I think that's like a given.
Yeah. One could assume the next season is going to take place in either 1985, 86.
Mm.
And Back to the Future came out then.
Yeah. And it takes place then, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. yeah. Until they go back.
Right.
But then they come back to the future, which is.
Yeah, right.
But no, that's definitely like such a 80s touchstone in pop
culture.
It
was actually like a weird, I haven't gone back to look at it, but I read something about it. So apparently when at the end of episode 9 or chapter 9, after the snowball, when it reverts to the upside down of this gymnasium and you get to see the mind flayer looming over the school.
The what?
The Thessal Hydra. If you haven't listened to the show before, we really thought the monster was going to be called the Thessal Hydra in reference to the season 1 finale. And we
hashtag
were very,
team Thessal Hydra.
Very disappointed when it was not. And we still support that as the better idea. Hashtag team Thessal Hydra.
These are merch ideas, guys.
But apparently, as the Thessal Hydra is looming over the school, the vehicles change into like 1950s era vehicles.
No shit. I didn't notice that.
I'm not sure if that's true, and I almost don't believe it because that makes no sense.
Yeah.
But it's almost as though the Upside Down takes place in the past, which would be like David Harbour and Winona's time at that school. I'm sorry, Hopper and Joyce's time at that school. I don't know. It's just interesting what they might do with that. I don't know what that means. But apparently it gets like old timey in the Upside Down, and it's happened before. I've never noticed that.
I would hate that so much if 3 was a prequel. I don't know if I could handle
that. Or maybe if
that.
It wasn't a prequel, but like whatever this...
They would probably just flash back.
Yeah. This like Upside Down world like began during Hopper and mm-hmm. Joyce's time
and
period.
That could be a huge throwback to it again. Like mm-hmm. this is like a 27 years later situation. Cool. So mm-hmm. I mean, that's possible.
Yeah.
And the original It took place in the 50s, correct?
Yeah.
And then the adult version was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's very possible. And we could see something like that. And they're clever enough to make it work. I've never noticed that before. And I don't know how it would work.
I mean, I think the Duffers have kind of intentionally left the rules of the Upside Down pretty vague. So that's not outside of the realm of possibility for any plot. I can't think of a whole lot of things that they could not do in the Upside Down based on the merit of what came before.
Yeah, they wouldn't, you know, go contradict their canon. It's kind of hard to do that at this point. Mm-hmm. They haven't pulled from a lot of the very famous Tim Burton films from the 80s. I mean, Batman might be hard to do, but they could do some clever stuff with Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice, which...
11. 11. 11.
Stars.
Oh, she's here.
It stars Winona Ryder. Those films have her. So I think that's a pretty obvious callback with what they're working with Winona. Maybe just have her sing that one song or something.
Shake,
Ramona. Man, we were really harmonized there, Steve.
Damn.
I'd like to see some Tim Burton stuff.
Yeah. I would actually like to see something from like more children's movies from back then, like Bedknobs and Broomsticks. It came out in 87, but it's not far off. And, you know, I loved that movie as a kid. And so I don't know what that they could pull from it. Like the
Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Yeah, absolutely. If I just have a broom sitting on a bed, I'd be happy. You know, another one that I think that surely they're going to have to do at some point is Princess Bride. To the point where I'm like, there probably is something in there that I just haven't seen yet, you know, like in a rewatch, like some kind of reference, like,
I don't know, you killed my father or some
perpetrator. I was going to say, what are they going to do?
None of that's happened
my
yet.
My name but, is Joyce Byers. You killed my father.
You killed my Bob Newby. Right. Yeah, there's just so much that they could do with Princess Bride. So I think that that's something that we could say.
What? I just thought of Dustin coming up and like, anybody want a peanut?
Anybody want a peanut?
Anybody want a peanut out there? Steve pointed out the Thunderdome, if we're going to go more Mad Max stuff. I think Teen Wolf is an obvious one, yes. Which I already thought they alluded to a little bit with Billy's
hair
on skin.
Yes.
And then Real Genius. I love that movie. I would love to see a cameo from Val Kilmer. Can we get that, Duffers? Hashtag everybody tweet the Duffers and say get Val Kilmer.
What's Val doing nowadays?
Did you know that Sean Astin sent a video of himself doing something to the Duffers? Like it was his idea.
Oh, really?
I'm not positive, but I'm 90% sure Sean Astin approached the Duffers like, hey, I think it's pretty obvious that I'm in the show. I'm really digging it. So
what's my part?
And they were like, fuck yeah. Yeah, duh, absolutely.
No.
Paul Reiser. I can't believe that they reached out to Paul Reiser, but Sean Astin had to contact them. Right. That doesn't make sense to me, but that might be the case.
I wonder when he would have reached out. Did he know that there was a part of Bob Newby? And he was like, no. I want to be that. Or was he just like, hey, I'm Sean Astin. I'm America's favorite 80s kid.
Apparently, Bob Newby's part was very small. He was just supposed to be a dorky love interest for Joyce. But once they found out that it was Sean Astin, they were like, oh, fuck. We're going to really fuck some people up when he dies.
And then they killed him.
And they made him, he had a much larger role as Bob Newby since it was Sean Astin.
So basically, if there's any new character in 3 that has a name that starts with the letter B, they're just dead.
And ends in B.
Yeah, they're just fucked.
Barb and Bob.
The whole
series. Didn't even make that connection.
It's amazing that they went to Chicago in this season, specifically in episode 7, and did not make any kind of John Hughes references. Because everything takes place in Shermer, Illinois, as Jay from Dogma would tell you. And movies are bullshit because Shermer, Illinois isn't real. But there's just so much with Breakfast Club that they could do.
I thought they did reference a lot of John Hughes.
Do you think?
Specifically, I think so.
16 Candles.
In season 1 for sure.
For sure, season 1. But I thought the dance scene at the end of the gate is a very John Hughes-y.
I agree. I think the snowball and anything like that, anytime the plot calms down enough to let the kids interact on that basis, especially with like young love, it's always John Hughes-y to me.
I just wanted Eleven to walk across a football field and raise her fist in the air in triumph.
Don't
at
you?
That'd have been great as an ending.
What's that guy? Judd Hirsch? Is that his name?
Yes.
Judd Nelson.
He's fucking harsh.
what's he up to?
Emil Hirsch, which is a random reference.
Yeah.
Judd Nelson, what's he up to? I think he's on like a basic cable television crime show or something.
I used to love that guy.
He is fucking harsh, though.
He was the voice harsh. Of Hot Rod in the Transformers movie in 1987.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
So the Duffers are on
Transformers.
Record.
Reference.
Yeah, where are those?
Why haven't we had any of those?
Yeah, the original Transformers movie came out in 85. I saw that and I skipped it because I was like, I mean, it's cool. How are you going to... All they're going to do is put a toy in the background. I mean, what else can they do?
That's all I want.
Unless you want Mike to be like, boys, roll out.
That would be perfect. What if there's like good upside down monsters and bad upside down monsters? And one of them's like, it's like Decepticons and Autobots.
Dustin, yeah.
More than meets the eye.
Yeah, well, we need Dustin to reference the... Yeah, that's what it's going to be.
What's wrong with Will? It's more than meets the eye, guys. Yeah,
that's going to be the Stay Frosty Boys of season 3. So in reference to season 3, the Duffers are on record for saying that it's going to be weirder and more character-centric stories.
Okay. How stranger will it be?
I don't know, but I think there's going to be some things for sure.
It's interesting that they chose that word.
What about weird science? When did that come out?
Season 3 is going to be called Weirder Things.
Yeah. They could use a weird science reference called Weirder Things. We also have Short Circuit, right?
Absolutely.
I like the idea of more character-centric stories. I don't know about weirder, but I think I don't have a whole lot of faith in humanity at large. I think they might what's it called? Balk a little bit.
Yeah.
At character driven stories for some, you know how they are. But I like the idea that they're not just going to.
Shadow monster and the bullshit. And
yeah. Like I read something.
I've got to think about morality.
Yeah. I read something online where some idiot was like projecting that, well, since we had one Demogorgon and there was a bunch of Demogorgons in season two, I think it's pretty obvious we're going to see like multiple Mind Flayers in season three. I was like, you're a fucking idiot.
God.
I don't ever let you anywhere near a writer's room.
Jesus.
If they do that, I'm
clearly
out.
Yeah. Clearly that's where they're headed.
It's obvious multiple Mind Flayers is where they go.
I've
with
cracked
this.
The Duffer's pattern. They introduce one monster and then they're just like, fuck it, have a bunch of them.
Yeah. So three.
I thought you were gonna say like there was one Demogorgon in season one, there was a bunch in season two, but there's a fuck ton in season three.
Wait, that's fair. That's a fair.
It becomes Gremlins comparison. 2 where there's like smart Demogorgons that are on TV with their own newscasts.
Yeah. It'd be cool to get like a Blade Runner reference somewhere. I think would be pretty sweet. Yeah. Like if we get maybe like somebody like Eleven has to hunt down the eight because she goes rogue. You know what I mean? Like she becomes the Blade Runner. That'd be pretty fucking tight.
There's like a new character that makes origami figures everywhere they go. Like what was that guy's name in Blade Runner?
Oh God,
I forget.
The one who's like, too bad she's not going to live.
Yeah.
But then again, who does?
But then again, who does? We just need an episode titled Tears in the Rain, I think, to get that one.
Yes. Yes.
So
get Rupert. What's the actor's name?
Again, I don't know.
Fuck.
Because he's not important. You can just IMDb that shit.
Weedish.
Rutger Hauer.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the origami guy.
No.
Of course I know Rutger
Tears
Hauer.
In the Rain. Rutger Hauer. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen things you people wouldn't believe.
Get him in season three.
Shadows off the belt of Orion.
That would be kind of cool if he came in season three as Dr. Owen's superior.
Yeah.
It's like, you fucked up, Hawkins.
You mentioned Rocky IV came out in 85, right? Or was it 86?
One of those years.
I think we need a Dolph Lundgren appearance.
If he dies, he dies.
You're not you imitating him on streaming things. I meant in the show. So my season three predictions, Steve and I have talked at length about this. I think Andy was there as well. I mean, he's on board with us. That we think it's going to be very government focused. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be the return of Dr. Brenner. I predict scarred by the Demogorgon. And we're going to gear up towards an ultimate supernatural battle in season four.
Mm-hmm.
But this one's going to be very much focused on the return of Dr. Brenner, the fallout from Murray Bauman and what that plot thread has done. And I think there's going to be a lot more focus on everybody. Nobody liked chapter 7 and the reveal of 8. I liked it a lot, and I think that's going to have a lot to do with season 3. I think we will see the return of Kali as a good person, maybe some antagonism at first because she has a sordid past, but who will eventually be on the team. But I think there's going to be more numbers, either a new one, like a 12 that Brenner's been working on that is still under his thumb, that is very much able to combat 11, or one of the older ones that's just a little more rogue.
It'd have to be 13, right? The unlucky one that turns all evil and shit.
That would be cool if like he made a 12, that one didn't work out, and now there's like a really powerful 13.
We had to put that one down.
I never have any luck with the even numbers.
That's why I like 11 so much.
I feel like since it was never really, I didn't want Brenner to be back just because I want him back because I love Matthew Modine. But,
thank you, Andrew.
But I didn't want him back as far as plot wise. And I had held out hope that he wasn't back. But since it was never brought back up at any point in the finales, or the last two episodes, that he is indeed dead or whatever, they never, you know, laid the dirt on his grave. Put that to bed. He is, thank you. That's what I was trying to come up with. He's absolutely still alive at this point. I think that they are going to have to team up with him. So I think that like, it might be a plot thread that like Callie comes and she's trying to kill Brenner and, they have to prevent her from doing that because they need him for whatever reason to be able to combat the, Mind Flayer.
Interesting. I don't know that he has enough redeeming qualities in all of his child abuse and stuff to do that, but that would be a great arc for 11 and the ultimate forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting for sure.
I'm with you because, as you mentioned before, we think it's going to be very government focused. I'm actually wondering, I don't know if this will take place over the course of like one episode, but I think at some point Brenner is going to somehow capture Callie. and use her gifts against our protagonist. And that might be where some of the weirder things come from. Is mm-hmm. like she's kind of like we talked about Brian Cox's kid in X2, how we kind of use that guy's power against our heroes.
We should be better nerds and know that X-Men character's name.
I don't, he had
Brian Cox's kid.
Yeah, you know.
We referred to him as that for 2 weeks.
What's Brian Cox's character name?
I don't fucking know. Stryker.
Yeah, William Stryker. That's right. But I feel like you'll have a similar dynamic where he somehow uses her powers against our protagonist, and that's,
Eleven will be the Professor Xavier of this scenario. Yeah.
There's good in her. I felt it. But that wasn't Professor X, but anyway.
You did the Modine Professor X almost. There's good in her.
But yeah, I think like next season will be very much government focused.
Like cover up kind of shit.
Cover up. He's back with a force. And then maybe like at the very end, that's when the upside down shit happens and where they have to team up to stop it.
Sure.
But that leads to there's going to be even bigger battles to fight in season 4. And he might even get away and last until season 4. And he might be the ultimate villain.
I also read a fan theory that Nancy and Jonathan would go to college and sort of leave for a while during season 3, which make no difference to their sideline plot lines in season 2. And that Steve would stay in Hawkins and join the police force under the tutelage of Hopper. So I hate the idea of Nancy leaving for any length of time, but I love the idea of Steve in a cop outfit trying to, you know, plan off Hopper for a whole season. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And
especially outshining those two dumbass deputies that he's currently at.
I almost want to see him interact with the two dumb deputies, especially Porn Stash.
Yeah.
What's going to happen with Steve is he's going to go pro and play for the Cubs. He's got some skill with that bat. That's for true. Sure.
Is the Cubs the nearest professional? Yeah. Okay, I figured you knew that.
One character I'm really interested to see where they go with is Billy. Like, I'm really interested to see where they take that character. And,
the Duffers are on record. If you watch that Beyond Stranger Things thing, they consider him... And they made a weird comment at one point that I almost disagree with, but it's their fucking show, so I don't know that I can. They were like, it was talking about Steve. Like, we originally wanted Steve's character to be a ruthless human villain antagonist for the boys. You know, somebody irredeemable like Billy, which is what we ended up doing with his character. I really don't think he's irredeemable. I think there's a couple of moments of goodness that we saw even in Stranger Things 2. And now that we know from whence his assholiness comes, it's even more understandable. He's got this, you know, terrible father who beats him, and that's really the source of every bully, right? But I think calling me redeemable goes quite a long way, and is actually a counter to what we want to do with our culture, you know?
There should never be any, like, completely irredeemable characters, you know what I mean?
I hate the idea that he's just this one-sided asshole.
And we kind of got that in season 1 with Troy. The bully, you know,
happened to that piece of shit,
right? Yeah. Just sort of forcing kids to commit suicide and shit. Like, yeah, that's pretty irredeemable, you know, like,
true.
Plus, I mean, he pissed his pants in front of the whole school. You can't come back from that.
That kid's done. He had to move. Yeah. That's why he wasn't in this season. He had to move. There's no coming back.
Also, in my mind, I like to think in season 3, Mike's mom, Karen, cowgirl rides the shit out of Billy and leaves Ted. That is my main hope for season 3.
I can't wait to read the fan fiction. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so your biggest surprise. We were running way longer on this episode than I thought we would, but that's great.
Yeah. Hey, it's our last hurrah for a little bit.
Yeah, for like a week and a half. The biggest surprise from season 2, Stranger Things 2, Andy.
Let's see. The biggest surprise, I would have to say, is the acting prowess of Noah Schnapp.
That's fair.
That was not expected, even remotely, for me. I thought that they were going to sideline his character a bit just because I did not think that he was up to snuff. And fuck was I wrong. Like, that kid is going to be a star. And so I was completely... blindsided by how central he was yet again, and how excellent he was in pulling off these really emotionally charged scenes, and even like the horror scenes where he's like shaking or his eyes are twitching and shit while he's sleeping, like even like the body acting stuff, he pulls all of that stuff off too, and he looks like a consummate professional, and kid's like fucking 14 years old,
right?
It was, biggest surprise
by far.
Steve,
what was your biggest surprise?
that, but to talk about another one was I was very intrigued and surprised by the direction they took with Terry Ives and her involvement in the show. Mm-hmm. Last season, her part in the show was interesting and it gave a little backstory, but I still wasn't, by the end of season one, I wasn't convinced 100% like that was Eleven's mom. Mm-hmm. This season kind of definitely says, yes, that is
Mama.
But not only that, but she is integral to this, you know, conspiracy that we don't even really know truly the story behind, and it's definitely going to be propelling Eleven from here on out. Like yeah. next season that's probably going to be the main focus of her character, is, you know, diving deeper into that wormhole.
Yeah, I thought we had seen the last of Terry Ives in season one.
Yeah,
and I don't think we've seen the last of her in season two either. She seems to have some kind of connection with the Upside Down.
Evil Becky. It's going to happen, guys.
Evil Becky's come back. Oh, I was surprised we got Becky again, to be honest.
Yeah.
Back eye. My biggest surprise was what they did with the characters of Bob Newby and Dr. Owens. Mm-hmm. I was very wrong, as we all know by now, on where they were taking both of those characters. I thought it was pretty obvious that Dr. Owens was going to be a fuckboy. But I thought I was being clever. Like, Bob Newby is
a government spy.
No, he's a really good guy. Yeah. And he gets just mauled horribly by demodogs.
Yeah, he deserved better.
Which was awful. I got a text today from the wife of a friend of mine who had just seen it and was still unable to cope with the death of Bob Newby.
Oh.
And she texted me and said, Rudy!
Oh.
And I immediately knew what she was referring to, and it was awful. But I was also, I'm just going to cheat a little bit, very surprised, as much as I hated the Barb thread, what they did with Murray Bauman's character. Like, when he came in season one, it was like, oh, they got this fucking journalist, private detective guy who's a douche. I don't really like that at all, and that's not going to mean much. I thought it was kind of a throwback to the way Hop was with people who needed his help when he was a depressed sheriff, and that was all that we were going to see from Murray. But his little sort of almost bottle episode, where we spent a lot of that episode at Murray's house with being creepy, giving liquor to little kids, trying to get them to have sex, which, say what you want about me, I really loved. I thought that was great, especially the breakfast scene afterward. And I think we have not seen the last of Murray, in my opinion. I think he's going to have a lot of fan service and bringing him back, propelling him into season three.
Quick opinion question on that breakfast scene.
Mm-hmm.
When he drops his eggs, is that a blooper or was that intentional?
We talked about that.
Yeah, I think it was ad-libbed.
It had to be ad-libbed.
Okay.
Because I can't imagine them blocking the egg drop.
Yeah.
But if it is, how genius is his reaction where he stayed in character and went,
oops.
And
no one breaks? That's pretty professional.
Yeah, I don't know. We have to do some digging into that. If you knew, write into streamingthingspod@gmail.com about titled subject line, the egg drop. Andy, do we have another segment that we normally move into about this point in the show?
Yes, we have our chocolate pudding, wherein we talk about normally our favorite scene segment sequences of any given episode that we just watched. However, we just watched the entire season, so now we're going to break down our top three episodes of the season.
Top three.
Steve, what was your number
episodes?
Three?
Hold up. I do want to say, we did have a best performance section. I skipped it, assuming no one picked anyone other than Noah Schnapp.
Yes.
Was I correct?
I wrote alternates in case people did pick Noah Schnapp, because I assumed he would be picked. I picked David Harper as my number two.
Okay. Also, solid choice.
And Joe Keery was my number three.
Really? You thought Steve's performance was up there?
We like Steve.
Just because we love the character Steve doesn't mean he's the best actor.
He was a lot of fun. He brought a lot of fun to
Don't fall prey to your emotions,
I did love Steve in this whole
series.
We
all love Steve.
We all love Steve.
That's going to be our new show name. Moving forward, it's going to be We Love Steve.
Once you go Steve, you never leave.
Sorry to interrupt.
I'll be the Steve on a show called We Love Steve, but we're not talking about me.
We Love Steve. The chocolate pudding number three. My bad, Steve. What is it?
Oh, my third favorite episode. This was a hard one. There was a tie, but I had to choose one.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with number nine, the last episode, The Gate. Reason being, just mostly a lot of the reason why I chose this was the epilogue section of the episode.
Well, I loved it.
I really love seeing the kids at the dance, getting ready for the dance. I loved Hopper and Joyce's moment outside of the school. I love that type of stuff that kind of ties things up nicely in a nice, happy, feel-good knot.
Happy little bow.
Yeah.
There's another reference we didn't get. Footloose. Kevin Bacon should have jumped out and been like, I thought this was a party. Yeah.
That would have been great. Who's that guy?
Interesting little tidbit. The snowball was what they had in mind at the start of their writer's room. Like, they knew they wanted to end at the snowball. Oh, it was cool. One of the few things they knew before they knew anything else about what they were going to do.
That's so good.
With season two.
That's so good.
Andy, your number three episode in the Chocolate Puddings.
My number three would have to be episode two, Trick or Treat Freak. Seeing Eleven in the ghost costume is, bar none, like, the cutest thing of all time. This ghost. You're not going to know who I am.
Trick or treat.
We get the vicarious ruffle of the hair from Hopper. It was just awesome to get to see, like, this kind of happy home life before everything starts to fall apart and, you know, the plot starts to thicken. So it was neat to get to see all those. We get to see the epic-ass killing of the squirrel, which was, like, one of the craziest.
You love that squirrel.
So fucking cool.
I do, too.
And then we also get, like, some really sweet character moments, like when Eleven is trying to contact Mike, and, like, we realize that Mike, even though he's kind of an emo shit right now, has been, like, reporting to her, like, a diary every day, like, hey, it's day 253, this happened, da-da-da, are you out there? And, yeah, we just got some really excellent humor, some badass squirrel killing, and then we got some heartfelt stuff. So, yeah. What about you, buddy?
I think we have the same exact order of our top three.
I think we do.
My number three is also episode two for all those reasons. Ghost Eleven, the squirrel is way up there. Fuck you, Steve. That was badass.
I'm not saying it wasn't.
I like to think in season three that she just has levitating squirrels whirling around her like Magneto. And that's her main form of attack, is just flaming squirrels.
It's Squirrel Girl.
But that's already a different hero, Steve.
So yes.
Way to be a dick.
Well, if they decide to make that movie, obviously you got to cast Millie Bobby Brown, right?
Obviously. And I do think there's a lot in that episode, you know, the trick-or-treating, and we get to see, like, a lot about Will being bullied at school. And again, bullying is a huge theme.
Zombie
we didn't
boy.
Talk a lot about Will for some reason, the whole zombie boy thread. They're obviously trying to say a lot about that and what goes on at schools, even when there is no Demogorgons. There's a lot of danger for emotionally.
Kids are the worst. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Episode two has a lot to do with that. So what is your number two favorite episode, Steve?
My number two favorite is Trick or Treat Freak.
There you go.
Yeah. Everything you guys said, I one of my favorite moments of the entire show is when they're in costume as the Ghostbusters and they're arguing about who's Venkman and who's Winston. And then all of a sudden Dustin's like, guys, why is no one else in costume? Who makes these decisions? That was such a funny moment. And this episode was the most fun Stranger Things can be, in my opinion. I mean, there were still elements of danger and intrigue, but it was a lot of fun too. And that's why I put it as my number two.
Awesome. Andy, you're number two. I know it's going to be mine, and you want me to be able to say things, which is why you pointed at me.
Yeah, that's why I'm over with, guys. My number two is episode six, The Spy.
Son of a bitch.
This is a showcase of Steve, which is why I love this episode so much. We get these really cool bonding moments between Steve and Dustin, which just tore at my heartstrings, made me love Steve. We find out the secret behind his hair. I have attempted it. I have not mastered it yet, but I'm going to get there. We get the action hero Steve moment in the junkyard where they their plan goes to fucking shit. And Steve just has to man up and be like, you know what? I'm out here with these kids. I need to be the guy, because otherwise these little 14-year-olds are going to get massacred. We get, to see the extent of the gate, where, Dr. Owens brings Hopper down and says, like, we've, throughout all Stranger Things seen, like, the little, wall hole. And then finally they're like, no, this is how deep the rabbit hole goes. And they take the elevator down and it's like, oh fuck. Yeah. I don't remember what Hopper's lines is there, but it's not far off from, oh fuck.
Oh my God.
What about you, buddy?
My number two is also Chapter 6, The Spy, for all the reasons that you enumerated. I love the reunion in the junkyard and that whole action scene there. The whole dynamic of Dustin and Steve becomes in full effect here. and we had never seen that before. And I think you can have a whole spinoff series of just Dustin and Steve gallivanting around the country with bats and hockey sticks doing damage. Which, by the way, is there like a little bit of a tiny Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle reference to Casey Jones there with the hockey stick and the and the baseball bat?
Yeah,
probably not, but they should have done that. Hey, I'm still offering my services in the Stranger Things writer room. So I know the Duffers are avid listeners of ours. So just send me an email. We get a lot in episode 6 that just some amazing editing, like the smash cuts, rushing Will to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Some of the more important Noah Schnapp scenes really take their roots in this episode. We get that wonderful Murray Bauman scene, Nancy and Jonathan bone, which is awesome. And then we get that sweet pullout joke that took us all by storm. This episode was tons of fun. So that's it for chapter 6. Steve, your favorite episode of Stranger Things 2, lay it on me.
My favorite episode is episode 8, The Thessal Hydra.
Nice. I knew you were going to do that.
No, this episode was great. I feel like Stranger Things is at its best. Like it primes you, gets you so amped when all the characters are together. Mm-hmm. And for most of this episode, it's all the characters together trying to figure out what to do. And there's so many great sequences and scenes in this episode. I mean, it starts off pretty strong with Bob Newby going out like a hero. Mm-hmm. And then we get, one of my favorite scenes of this episode of the season was the scene where Joyce and Jonathan and Mike are trying to talk to Will after they've cardboarded a chair and other things in the shed. And that's such an emotional scene. I love the way it's shot. But then, of course, everything with the kids talking to Hopper about what the Mind Flayer is. And he's like, this is a dumb kid's game. No, it's a manual. But then they finally pull him into it. And then he's like, okay, well, how we kill it? It's zombies. It's just a game. Like the show works best when you have all these characters working off each other in high stakes situations like this. And this is such a phenomenal episode. And that's why it is my number one.
It is also my number one. Good episode man. 8. The Mind Flayer monster, formerly known as the Thessal Hydra.
It's a long title.
For the reasons that you just said, Bob Newby, superhero. I love the, we can't just turn on the power. I mean, you still got to reset the passwords and everything. And do you know basic? It's like, no, teach it to me. Shall I teach you French while I'm at it? How about some German? Bob Newby's just such a badass. Was not thinking that he was going to be as cool of a guy as he was. Justice for Bob, for sure. We get the return of 11. They get cornered in the house, and I'm not sure why they didn't when they knew the
Demo Dogs.
The Demo Dogs were coming. Thank you. I'm not sure why they didn't take off, but it was so worth it because they're stuck in the house, and then we hear all the noises outside, and then 11 comes through the door like a badass, and we get Mike's, just the reaction of Mike's getting to see 11 again. This whole series, I'm like, oh my God, I just want the crew back together. And they knew that I was going to feel that way. They wrote this with me in mind. And so finally,
they had a meeting in episode 4, but one of the Duffers was like, Hey guys, save it. Andy's
going to love it.
He's going to love it. He's going to cream his pants when he sees this.
And it was so badass. Like Chris said, like the whole detour that they did with episode 7 was worth it in the end to have her walk in looking like fucking Trinity from the Matrix. It was super cool.
She does look a little bit like Trinity.
What about you, man? What's your number one?
My number one is chapter 3. The shitty episode. No, it's not a shitty episode. It's just by Stranger Things standards. It's still better than every other show. It's chapter 8. I mean, let's not no fucking around. Everybody knows it's the Mind Flayer. It's the best episode of season 2. For all of those reasons, RIP Bob Newby, David Harbour interacting with the boys as Hopper. We keep calling him David Harbour. he's just cool. And obviously, the return of 11 is the best moment in Stranger Things history. One of the best moments of my life, as I have said before. I was crying, like happy crying, like a baby over in my lazy boy. And I can't wait to revisit that moment and just seeing her stalking in. I think she was wearing Chuck Taylors, like the white on white kind, the classic sneakers.
Her jeans were rolled up a little bit.
Rolled up those jeans. Punk 11 rolls in. It makes the whole. And I knew it. I knew it. Everybody was fighting the makeover. She looks dumb. I like her curly hair when she looks like Ripley from Aliens. Da, 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 da. I was like, nah, I think she looks badass. She's really going to rock it later. And full effect. She walks through that, saunters through that door, I'll say. And then emotionally, the stakes, you know, the look on Mike's face when he just realizes for sure that she's alive. And it's tons of fun. That episode has everything that we love about Stranger Things. And Stranger Things itself is a mixed bag. It's horror and comedy and action and an entire decade worth of wonderful films all mixed together into a new and exciting way. And yeah, this show doesn't. A lot of people are. It's the hot take now to say that Stranger Things is overrated. And like any nerd that loves a property, you balk at that. But I think they're objectively wrong. Anything that can reach this many people and mean so much to them needs to have a second look. Not always, because the Fast and Furious franchise is also very popular. But you know what I mean? Normally that works for validating a property.
I think that that's popular for a completely different reason. Yeah.
You know, this
people just like cool really shit. That's why that
reaches people. And there's a reason why. It's because it's very deftly done and puts a lot of love and passion into it. And that's the thing. That's why season one is so good. Is that's a passion project that just happened to be greenlit magically through some, you know, Shyamalan magic and Netflix generosity that nobody expected would be like this. It's a passion project, and the passion is still there. It's not like the Duffers are somewhere counting money, working on another project. You can tell they still have the passion in this. And it all shows through in Chapter 8, The Mind Flayer. Steve, do we have another segment that we'd normally get to about this exact fucking time?
Usually we would go into Easter Eggos, which is where we would try to find Easter eggs, cultural references in whatever episode that we had just watched. However, we just watched the entire season, and we did a pretty good job of finding some Eggos.
I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
But there are some that we missed, and Chris, you more specifically did a lot of research to see what Eggos we missed.
I do want to say I am very proud of you fellas. You did a very good job with the Eggos this year, because season one, we had a lot of criticism and literature to pull from when we're analyzing those Easter eggs, and we saw a lot of them ourselves, but there was no verifying that because there's a lot of literature out on what the exact Eggos were. So it was a little bit of cheating. And I remember Steve specifically mentioning when we did the season one recap, when we got off air, you talked to Andy and I, he said, you guys are really good at this. I feel like I'm not very good at it. And Andy and I just read a lot of articles about the Easter eggs in season one. And now with none of that to pull from, Steve,
you're the MVP for sure.
Double hours in every episode. So that goes to show the real truth of that. But moving on, we missed some obvious ones. I don't think any of us ever mentioned Millie's hair in reference to Ripley from the Aliens franchise. Strangely,
her curly hair.
Yes, we missed Millie, I mean 11. We also missed the ghost costume as a reference to E.T.
Yeah. Literally, it was Halloween also.
Yeah. Like, I think that was one of those ones where we were like, well, everyone knows that one. That one's
I think that's subconsciously that's what it was. And Eleven was so goddamn cute in it, way cuter than E.T., that we just forgot about that. There's a Ferris Bueller's Day Off reference in Mr. Clark's classroom when it shows all the slack-eyed children in his class.
Yeah, we talked about that sequence of the one girl specifically with the paper. What are those things called?
We don't know.
Something.
Wish, the wish things where you're like, pick a number, pick a color. And then the one
girl's, you suck.
And then the one girl's popping the gum in her mouth. Yeah. So we talked about that scene, but yeah, apparently it was an Easter egg.
Apparently a blatant reference to Ferris Bueller. There's also a really deep cut Sean Astin reference with how Bob Newby hates orange. And how there was some kind of contract deal that he missed with the company Orange or something like that. I didn't even really understand it when that Eggo was being explained to me. But
yeah, it was like a commercial or something for a company called Orange.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, it was the commercial was him pitching an idea to them. And then they are essentially like, no, we want you to be a hobbit, essentially, like playing off his Lord of the Rings fame. And he leaves in a huff. Like, that's the joke of the commercial, I think, is what it was.
Oh, okay.
And that's why he doesn't like Orange. It's because they didn't like his idea.
Very obscure Sean Astin reference. But yeah. I can see how that'd be fun. Understandably, we missed a lot of the Halloween costumes in the party scene, which is one of that takes place in episode two, right? Where she says bullshit.
Yeah, I think so.
I forgot to say that's one of the reasons it's in my top three episodes, because Natalie Dyer, one of the best drunk performers of all time.
Yes.
very accurate drunk
uncomfortably performance. Uncomfortably accurate portrayal of a drunk person. I'm sitting there like, oh my God, that's so what it's like. Jeez.
And he's like, Christ. That's me.
I'm bullshit.
That's me on Saturday.
I'm Nancy on Saturday nights. But
Saturday, like Wednesday morning.
I feel like we can be forgiven for a lot of these costumes that we miss because it's kind of like you have to pause it every frame and be like, what's that in the background?
I'm not even going to enumerate. I think we missed one of the guys from Animal House.
Pure Fuel guy.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah. We missed a Wonder Woman. A lot of stuff. A lot of those 80s costumes.
I was actually happy because I was very concerned as to what the girl... But yeah, that one girl who was talking to Jay Bird mm-hmm. and then they like cut that scene short.
Yeah.
I was wondering what she was supposed to be because he makes it like, kiss? One of the no, she's Susie Sue. And I'm like, oh.
Susie Sue. I heard you in the corner going, Susie Sue.
I love Susie and the Banshees.
Yeah, and there was Michael Jackson from the Beat It video specifically, which I would have never got. Yeah. Anyway, a bunch of shit like that. The three rules that Hopper has for 11 is apparently a reference to the three rules in Gremlins. Mm-hmm. And specifically, keep them away from sunlight, which he even says to 11. One of the rules is don't go out during the daylight, especially.
Don't eat past midnight.
And then no Eggos after midnight, I think, is a rule.
And don't get them wet.
Yeah, for sure.
11 can't take a bath.
The Goonies is a reference. Excuse me. So Dustin's love for Three Musketeers and how constantly feeding it to Dart is sort of like Chunk's Snickers relationship with Sloth in The Goonies.
Were those Snickers that he...
Oh, it's Baby Ruth. I'm so silly.
It is.
It's an obvious. It's a huge part of the movie. Yeah. Baby Ruth.
Yeah.
Baby Ruth. It'd be so weird if he said, Snickers. It's way different.
100 grand bar.
100 gram bar. What an obscure candy bar reference, Steve. Nobody gives a fuck about 100 grand.
Cadbury egg.
It's like Andy's favorite is zero bar.
There's a best. Bizarre. You guys just don't know it yet.
You're crazy.
I mean, they are good.
But you're crazy, man. It's a trap. So when Mike's running towards the door saying it's a trap with the scientist, that's one Empire Strikes Back reference Steve didn't catch.
Which yeah. I'm
very impressed that you missed my Karate Kid reference and went for that. But apparently it's another one. That's like the Fleetwood Mac of this season. It's so embarrassing. It's clearly a Karate Kid reference. Kali is Mr. Miyagi. Steve's like, no, I think it's supposed to be Empire.
With Yoda and Luke at Dagobah?
I was like, shit, it totally is. It's obvious.
It would have been better if Mike was like, Lando, Lando, like running up to the cars. That would have been sweet.
And then the final song, which is what, Steve?
Every Breath You Take.
By
the Policeman.
Every breath you... So the final lyrics of that, there's a tiny kind of plot ego in there wherein as it cuts to the Thessal Hydra, which they stupidly call the Mind Flayer, looming over the school. It's like some creepy shit. Like, I'm always going to be watching you, dude. I'm going to get you. Something like that, right, Steve?
I think the line is, I'll be watching you right when it flips to the upside down. But it's like kind of, they put like a menacing echo to it.
Oh, yeah.
I was reading something online the other day. The reason why it is looming over specifically the school, because when I watched the finale, I was kind of like, oh, come on. It couldn't just be like out menacingly in the background somewhere. Like it had to be like the school.
How's the snowball going?
It's because Eleven's there. It's never experienced anything like that. Like she didn't kill it or anything, but she did like stop it in its tracks and, you know, close the gate and everything. So it's like, I know where you are.
Yeah.
So like from now until the next time we see it in season 3, it's going to be passive aggressively stalking 11 and the episode like, yeah. I see you, bitch. Yeah. Oh, Eggos must be your weakness.
Close my fucking hole.
I'll teach you.
Oh, goodness.
That's how he talks for sure.
You youth.
That's one of the big fan theories is that she is on the radar of the Thessal Hydra / Mind Flayer. And I just got stuck in a second thinking about how awkward it is going to be talking about this monster for the rest of our show's run, because I have to keep explaining to listeners who don't know how we feel why we're calling it the Thessal Hydra. I feel like we need to start calling it the Mind Flayer, unfortunately. No. Andy's like, no, I'm not doing it.
Hey, this is our last season 2 episode. We can call it the Thessal Hydra, and then starting season 3, we'll call it the Mind Flayer.
Now. So that's all the Eggos that we missed.
I'd be called Keith. Which is very...
Ooh-wee. He's just a Rick and Morty character all of a sudden. That just about does it for our final episode of season two of Streaming Things. Whether or not you care or not, and whether or not you're going to continue listening, we have a great deal of fun doing this. So we're going to continue this show. We've decided, and we paid for the RSS feed for like a long time. So there's that. But we would like to make sure that it is a property that you want to hear us talking about. So if you care about your own little ear holes, you should probably write into streamingthingspod@gmail.com with your suggestions of where we should take the show next. And we would love to consider your suggestions. Any final parting thoughts for our listeners before we take a little meditation time? Andy's going off to Ireland.
Yes.
By the way.
Tired.
So for all those Irish tired listeners.
Yeah, you might run into Andy at the pub.
It's going to be pretty sweet.
I recognize that angelic voice.
Well, even if we start to cover a show that you're not particularly interested in, we are going to be doing shorter episodes for whatever property we decide to pick up next. If you aren't interested in any of those, at least we'll see you next year. I mean, when season three drops.
Yeah, it'll probably be like late 2019, maybe 2020, though. So
yeah. Well, whenever it is.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. You're trying to be positive. Like, hey, at the very worst, we'll see you for season three.
Yes.
I know there was some talk of possibly like reviewing just one-off films and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I love doing that.
That could be a way to keep people coming in. If you guys like, I don't know if I want to see Thor Ragnarok. Yeah. What did the Streaming Things guys think about it?
I like those guys. They're pretty cool. They do really sweet voices sometimes. And I like to see how they do the Hulk. I mean, that's great.
Somehow all their listeners talk like this. Yeah. This is just how they sound.
Crazy. Yeah, we just assume that's how you all speak. So yeah, right into the email thingy. We love to see that. Follow me on Twitter, me Chris, @CMichaelRudd, spelled like it sounds, Rudd with two D's. You can also follow this podcast on Twitter @StreamThingPod. We haven't put a whole lot of effort into the Twitter. I think we're rocking about 9 followers on that one.
You goddamn right.
I think 3 of them are us.
Yeah. You can also like us on Facebook @StrangerThingsPodcast. And things like that. Yeah. Andy, what can we find more of your shit on the web?
You can follow me on Twitter at @InkwellVerbal.
Right on. And then Stu.com is you, right?
Stu.com. Yeah.
SteveMayFilms.com is my website.
SteveMayFilms.com.
Such a good guy.com.
If you want a video editor, reach out to me.
That's right.
I like video editing.
He does some sick video editing, and he's got a lot of hilarious things from Stranger Things Season 2 that he's editing together for your pleasure. You can see the kind of great work that he does.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. That's all we've got for right now. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Stu.
And this has been another wonderful edition of Streaming Things.
Streaming Things.
Streaming Things.
Streaming Things.
Streaming Things.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow,
and monetize their podcast everywhere. Acast.com.